This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our bulletin of church news to be followed by our feature of culture and society. Today we shall close with a segment dedicated to young people. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. On the solemnity of the Ascension of the Lord on Thursday, Pope Leo XIV exhorted the faithful to embrace the mission entrusted to them by the Lord, writing on X, the former Twitter. The Holy Father in his message said, "The solemnity of the Ascension of the Lord turns our gaze heavenward. It also reminds us," he went on, "of the mission Jesus Christ entrusted to us here on earth. May the Holy Spirit help us fulfill it faithfully," the Pope prayed. In a brief statement on Thursday, the Holy See Press Office said, Pope Leo XIV left the Vatican in the morning and traveled the almost 43-kilometer journey to the papal summer residence of Castel Gandolfo. According to the director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni, Pope Leo went to grace the occasion of the Borgo Laudato Si project. He also took advantage of the trip to visit the papal palace there. He returned to the Vatican later in the afternoon. Pope Leo XIV has sent a message to the participants at the commemorations of the 500 years of the Anabaptist movement, organized under the theme "The Courage of Love, Anabaptist at 500. The festivities took place on Thursday, 29th May, in Zurich, in Switzerland. The Anabaptist movement began in 1525, and this Christian movement traces its origins to the radical reformation in the 16th century. The movement is being marked with various events and celebrations around the world. In his message, Pope Leo XIV has encouraged these celebrations, emphasizing the importance of missionary outreach and building bridges of understanding. The anniversary is a time to reflect on the movement's history and its continued impact on Christian faith and practice, he says. The motto chosen for your celebration, "The Courage to Love," reminds us above all of the need for Catholics and Mennonites to make every effort to live out the commandment of love, the call to Christian unity, and the mandate to serve others. It likewise points to the need for honesty and kindness in reflecting on our common history, which includes painful wounds and narratives that affect Catholic Mennonite relationships and perceptions up to the present day. How important then, he said, is that purification of memories and common rereading of history that can enable us to heal past wounds and build a new future through the courage to love. In the context of our war-torn world, Pope Leo said in conclusion, "Our ongoing journey of healing and of deepening fraternity has a vital role to play, for the more united Christians are, the more effective will be our witness to Christ, the Prince of Peace, in building up a civilization of loving encounter." With these sentiments, he said, "I assure you of my prayers that our fraternal relations will deepen and grow. Upon all of you, I invoke the joy and serenity that come from the risen Lord," he concluded. The Vatican on Thursday unveiled a floral reproduction of the coat of arms of Pope Leo XIV in the Vatican Gardens. The work of this coat of arms was done by the Gardens and Environment Service of the Directorate of Infrastructure and Services of the Governorate and took 2 weeks to be crafted. The structure frame in which the coat of arms is set remains the same as that of the late Pope Francis. It consists of a mitre placed between crossed gold and silver keys, bound with a red cord. The gold key was made using variegated spindle, a plant that is regularly trimmed in order to remain dwarf and maintain its yellowish color. The silver key was created using another special plant, the Hericrysum italicum, a seasonal plant that must be replaced at least once a year in order to preserve its color. Everything said, in the end, nature with all its splendor and color, combined with the expertise of the Vatican Garden staff, brought to life this gem of artistic beauty. Caritas Internationalis this week hosted a global virtual meeting to discuss ending the global debt crisis. The objective of the meeting was to align Caritas advocacy for debt cancellation with the 2025 Jubilee Year of Hope. This event, which is part of the 10 Debt into Hope campaign, aims to address unsustainable debts and promote debt justice. Senior Officer for Global Advocacy Campaigns at Caritas Internationalis is Alfonso Apicella. He spoke to Vatican Radio about the reason for having this webinar.
The main motivation for a webinar is that we are halfway through the Jubilee year, end of May, and we are also celebrating the Laudato Si, the teachings coming, drawing on Laudato Si, and how that informs, in turn, our campaigning and advocacy within the Catholic community worldwide in the realm of economic justice. We have an awful lot to learn and to enact from the Laudato Si, namely what integral ecology looks like in the economic justice space, and how that informs debt relief initiatives in the countries and communities where we operate in 162 countries. The webinar is also the culminating point of the Relay of Hope, which is a global initiative that we initiated on the 24th of May, ending today with more than 40 communities worldwide participating by holding a so-called Relay of Hope stage, where people light a candle and say publicly that they support the Turn Debt into Hope campaign wherever they are, and passing the candle on to others within their community, so that illustrates the power of public support that we are gathering for the Turn Debt into Hope campaign in the Confederation and beyond.
Senior Officer for Global Advocacy Campaigns at Caritas Internationalis, Alfonso Apicella, speaking to Vatican Radio about the recent Caritas webinar on debt cancellation campaigns. We can hear more on this in our feature on development and the economy on Friday. The church in Africa must bring people together in order to overcome racism and reverse decades of apartheid that continue to dominate life, especially in South Africa. South African Cardinal Wilfred Napier said this when he spoke to the Arch Catholic News Agency this week. Cardinal Napier acknowledged the lingering effects of apartheid, which for decades imposed a rigid racial segregation in South Africa in favor of the nation's white minority. Although the racial segregation system was largely abolished by the early 1990s, the structures of apartheid that were put in place cannot be reversed easily, Napier said. The ongoing efforts of the racist policies, Napier said, are manifested in the reality of township churches, township parishes, and then your more middle-class and sometimes upper-class parishes in the country. He said that that is the reality that the church has to work in, pointing out the fact that the very deprived areas mostly consist of black citizens, while wealthier areas are more mixed. He went on to say that the church can help overcome these historically unjust circumstances by ensuring that when we have diocesan meetings and diocesan structures, we draw from all those backgrounds and bring the people together. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio. This is Culture and Society, and welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. The Vatican has always reiterated the fact that technology should better human life and not take it. For this reason, the Holy See has, especially in recent years, encouraged the ban on lethal autonomous weapons systems, saying technological progress should be used in order to improve human life and that it should never be allowed to destroy life. The representation of the Holy See has always used the United Nations International Platform in order to echo the teachings of the Catholic Church on this fact, urging the international community to closely monitor the development of lethal autonomous weapon systems, which are colloquially called killer robots. Last year, the late Pope Francis addressed a special message to the G7 leaders about the need to ban lethal autonomous weapon systems. In that message, the Pope said human beings must always remain in control of any weapon system, adding, "No machine should ever choose to take the life of human beings." The Holy See's permanent observer to the United Nations and other international organizations in Geneva, Archbishop Balestrero, subsequently echoed these fears of the Holy Father in his interactions with the international community, stating that the Holy See seeks a legally binding agreement to regulate research into the weaponization of artificial intelligence and a moratorium on their development and use, lamenting the fact that countries are using theaters of war in order to test lethal autonomous weapon systems, which require no human input to select and apply force. Concerned experts are saying that these weapons are developing rapidly and actually pose a threat to existing humanitarian, ethical, human rights and security norms. There is now serious discussions about the need for urgent political courage in order to address the issue of these killer robots. Recently, the United Nations organized a two-day informal consultation session in New York for a close understanding of this reality, promoting ongoing negotiations towards a legal framework which will regulate and ban such systems. Nicole Van Rijen is the executive director of the civil society coalition known as Stop Killer Robots, meaning the lethal autonomous weapon systems. On the sidelines of that special meeting, Naima Sawaya from the United Nations News sat down with Van Rijen and asked her to explain a few points about the lethal autonomous weapon systems, the killer robots.
Stop Killer Robots is a growing coalition of non-governmental organizations. There are about 270 members currently who work across 70 different countries in the world. And the goal of the organization is to reach a legally binding instrument that prohibits and regulates the use of autonomous weapon systems.
Let's start out simple. What is an autonomous weapon system and why are they a hazard to human rights?
So autonomous weapon systems are weapon systems that can select and target without any human intervention. Once a human activates it, it can select and target without the possibility of deactivating it. It has a whole wide range of implications from international humanitarian law to human rights law to ethical considerations to security considerations and humanitarian considerations. So there is a broad range of issues at stake here.
And specifically with the human rights, why does it impact human rights?
Autonomous weapon systems are a hazard to human rights because they will really curtail the rights people have in their daily lives. And so, for example, in a case of a demonstration and law enforcement coming in, that technology, having, for example, a drone, an autonomous drone flying over and identifying or crowd control, it really presses on the rights to freedom of assembly, for example, or border control in terms of also migration issues.
Building off this understanding of autonomous weapon systems, what role do algorithms play and how do they impact the guarantee of human rights?
So autonomous weapon systems can include algorithms and AI, but it also cannot. For example, for the ICRC, a landmine could be considered an autonomous weapon systems, for example, because once activated, can't deactivate it anymore by a human. So in terms of the algorithms that play into it, the concern with that is also the bias that exists from the manufacturers, from the people who develop these algorithms, right? And so all the biases that exist in our society and that fundamentally negatively impact the lives of people who are already marginalized, this will only increase that.
Why are current human rights laws and other international laws insufficient in regulating autonomous weapons systems?
That's a good question. International humanitarian law and international human rights law very much apply to people, not machines, right? And so there is a bit of a gap there. And it also plays into the accountability gap. If there isn't a human in the loop, then who is accountable? Is it the manufacturer? Is it, you know, the person who programmed the algorithm? Who is accountable? And that raises a whole range of issues and concerns as well when it comes to the proliferation of such weapons and the use of such weapons by state militaries, but also by non-state armed groups, by criminal groups, or just individuals.
You have previously said that it would be a failure for humanity if there was not some sort of agreement reached on autonomous weapon systems. What sort of regulations would ensure that autonomous weapon systems are compatible with human rights?
Indeed, I think it would be a moral failure just because the issues I mentioned before, like it could be a widespread use of them. And if there isn't any accountability, it's like with anything, you know, you're more prone to violate the law. And so I think we need an international legally binding instrument that would regulate the use of autonomous weapon systems. And in that, we mean prohibit autonomous weapon systems that do not allow for meaningful human control. Autonomous weapon systems that target people should be prohibited. And then regulate all other weapon systems to ensure that they actually comply with international laws.
It seems that human control is a theme that comes up a lot in discussions about autonomous weapon systems. Can you tell me a little bit about this idea of human control and how it interacts with human rights?
So the idea of meaningful human control is this, that there is someone in the loop, that you don't remove human agency from the military operation or the law enforcement operation or border control, and that especially in the targeting of people, that just we don't cross the line, that it's a machine that can kill a human being. And so what's really great is also in the discussions, whether it's in Geneva or here also during these 2 days, these 2 day informal consultation, it's really picking up this notion of meaningful human control. And I think 10 years ago when the discussion started, it wasn't so much accepted. But today I think it's also in the redefinition or in the main characterizations of an autonomous weapon system, it's going to come in. I think there's a broad understanding that there's a need for meaningful human control, that we can't just have autonomous, fully autonomous weapon systems where the human operator is completely removed from these actions. Yeah.
You mentioned that there have been 2 days of informal consultations and that the Secretary General has set a deadline of 2026 to have an instrument for regulating autonomous weapon systems. What is the status of ongoing conversations and negotiations, and what are some of the remaining issues that need to be worked out?
So we're not negotiating yet. This is a problem. These are still consultations, informal consultations, whatever that may mean. And in Geneva, it's the same thing within the CCW, which is much more of a technical discussion, whereas here in New York, it's more of a political discussion. But the technical discussion is still agreeing on terminology. It's still agreeing on the elements that need to be included in a negotiation, in a treaty, to start the negotiations. So we're not anywhere close to really already negotiating a text. However, the current chair of the CCW has put forward a rolling text that is really quite promising, and that, if there is political will and political courage, could form the basis of negotiations. And whether that takes place in Geneva or in New York is very much dependent on the high contracting parties.
What are some of the issues that people who are involved in these conversations are having trouble coalescing around right now?
Different issues, I think, in terms of the characteristics of an autonomous weapon systems. Is it a lethal autonomous weapon systems or just an autonomous weapon systems, for example, just on the name itself? On the issue of meaningful human control, there's still some points of disagreement, I think, but also in terms of the anti-personnel side that I mentioned before, everyone agrees on a two-tier approach on these set of prohibitions and the regulations, so that's already quite a huge improvement.
Executive Director of the Stop Killer Robots Civil Society Coalition, speaking there to Naima Sawaya about the way forward regarding the lethal autonomous weapon systems, the killer robots. And that is all we have time for in this edition of Culture and Society. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
And now, news for young people.
Hello and welcome to the program. I am Festus Tarawali. Sports and games have an important role to play in education and the overall well-being of young people. They teach students life skills like teamwork, leadership, accountability, goal setting, and patience. In his address Tuesday to members of the Football Club of Naples, Italy, which on Friday won the Italian Serie A league title, Pope Leo XIV reflected on the importance of teamwork and the educational and moral value of sports. The Holy Father began his address to the Napoli club by stressing that it is teamwork that wins a championship. Speaking in Italian, he said to win the championship is a milestone that one reaches at the end of a long journey, where what counts the most is not the one-off exploit or the extraordinary performance of a champion. The championship is won by the team, and when I say team, I mean the players, the trainer with the entire team and the sports association. The Pope then added that he wanted to briefly discuss the educational role of sport. Unfortunately, he said, when sports becomes a business, it risks losing the value that makes it educational, and it can even become harmful from that point of view. Pope Leo said it is necessary to keep a lookout for this, especially with regard to teenagers. I appeal to parents and sports managers. We must be very careful of the moral quality of the experience of sport at a competitive level, because the human growth of the young is at stake, he said. As reported previously, the Catholic Youth Network for Environmental Sustainability in Africa, known by the acronym CYNESA, is set to host the third Laudato Si Youth Assembly in Accra, Ghana, from the 30th of May to the 1st of June. The gathering under the theme, A Decade of Laudato Si, Journeying Together in Hope for Our Common Home, will bring together youth from across Africa to reflect, mobilize and renew their commitment to environmental justice and ecological conversion. The event will coincide with the broader Jubilee Year of Hope and the 10th anniversary of both Pope Francis's landmark encyclical Laudato Si and the Paris Agreement on Climate Change. The encyclical Laudato Si on the Care for Our Common Home was signed by the late Pope Francis on the 24th of May 2015. It was officially published at noon on the 18th of June of the same year. Since its publication, there have been many initiatives on the continent of Africa to promote its message. One such initiative is the Laudato Si Youth in Uganda. Brother Adolf Mugume of the Holy Cross Missionaries spoke to Vatican Radio about that initiative.
I've been involved with mentoring a group of young people in Uganda called the Laudato Youth Initiative since the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. This initiative grew out of the need to give hope. During the pandemic, as you may know, we witnessed the urgent need for climate action, especially the heightened increasing natural disasters and the environmental degradation, witnessing the effects of pollution, climate injustice, really motivated me to create a platform where youth could engage in meaningful action in response to the message of the encyclical Laudato Si, and with emphasis on our shared responsibility to care for our common home, encouraging young people to unite and be the change they want to see. We need to form a generation of climate resilient people, as Pope Francis in his encyclical Laudato Si tells us, as well as in the Catholic social teachings. We aim to empower youth to take action for our planet and advocate for sustainable living, encouraging them to become active participants in a journey to ecological conversion, as we are called by the Church to address the escalating global warming. And I chose to front the youth because they are the future leaders who will inherit the consequences of today's environmental decisions. Engaging them fosters a sense of responsibility and hope, allowing them to become champions for change in their families and communities. We are also mentoring a climate-resilient generation of Laudato youth who will grow up with the understanding and values needed to approach environmental issues practically. With the presence of the media, we opted to adopt using the media to sensitize people about the dangers of adapting to climate change as a solution for the then COVID pandemic. Again, began in passion engagement in April 2022, and a year later, we thought it wise and came up with a very amazing program that we launched called the Laudato Si Festival. Having entered into the field to see what happened after the aftermath of the pandemic, there was much good because the world had rested, but there was a lot of harm that was going on in communities and families. People really destroyed the environment. So the Laudato Si Festival became like an iconic event, which was an annual event that unites communities and organizations for concrete actions encouraging corporate social responsibility aligned with caring for creation, but also engaging the intergenerational relationship of the young people reaching out to communities to serve and help people know about Laudato Si. What was interesting and has still stands out unique of us is how much we are able to communicate Laudato Si using things like festivities, which people know and like. And I think if you go to Uganda today, in most institutions of learning, and in parishes and dioceses, you find a lot of Laudato Si activities taking place because of our initiative.
Brother Adolf Mugume of the Holy Cross Missionaries. And that's all for this edition of News for Young People. Till the same time next week, I am Festus Sarawali. This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Remember to join us again at the same time tomorrow. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudato Jesus Christus.